Okay, we've already opened the meeting before our executive session, and we do have a quorum present, so this meeting, this portion is called to order at 5 o'clock. Please join me with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First order of business is approval of the agenda. Any questions or change requests? Could I have a motion to approve it?
I make a motion to approve the agenda.
No, any.
Second.
TJ seconded. Any discussion? All in favor?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Motion's approved. Public comment. Do we have anybody for public comment? Nope. Okay. 2.01, recognition of Liz Navarro.
Liz, you got to come up here.
Okay.
And so, I think everybody knows Liz. Oh, if they don't back there, they will, those kids. I do want to read something here. Liz is being recognized for some an amazing award. And I'll just read it this way, and I say a couple of things off script. Our incredible director of career and technical education, Liz Navarro, has been recognized as Administrator of the Year by the Washington Industrial Technology Education Association. It's no small thing, big thing. This prestigious award highlights her outstanding leadership in CTE, dedication to student and teacher success, and commitment to building innovative and effective programs. Over the past few years, Liz has secured over $120,000 in grants, including career preparation and launch grant for over 84,000, and the high demand CTE grant for 20,000, expanding opportunities for our students and ensuring they gain valuable real world skills for their futures. Since 2008, God, it's been a long time, hasn't it? Since 2008, Liz Navarro has been dedicated to preparing our own students for bright futures. She began her journey as a food service director, developing the Food for Thought program and hosting community dinners with student chefs enrolled in a program. Since 2018, she has served as the Director of Career and Technical Education, Worksite Learning Coordinator, and a teacher of career preparation class at FHHS. Through her leadership, students gain valuable skills, industry connections, and the confidence to pursue their dreams. And so, Liz, we thank you for your passion and your commitment to all of us. And Liz,
Oh, wow.
what you really got to know about Liz, a little bit off script, and then Andrew can say something, is everything Liz has touched was golden from 2008 on. And if you go and eat lunch here, that's Liz, right?
Yeah.
If you go and look at some of the old accreditations, and the new ones, that's Liz. You know, she just is good at the work she does. This, she absolutely deserve this recognition. So from the district and all of us, congratulations with you deserve it.
Recognizing the hard work that there's a team behind me and around me and above me and everywhere that helps make this work. And you know, it's easy to write grants, and you've got those three special words: rural, remote, and underserved. So the goal is to get kids parity with students off island and make sure they have the same experiences that they get advantage of over on the mainland. So thank you for giving me the arena to do the good work, and thanks for the recognition.
Thank you. We appreciate you very much.
Yes, we do.
And Diana, can you get a good enough picture of this? Good. Okay.
I got video.
Okay, now it's Rod's turn. Song and dance time. Put the salmon not in front of me, please.
Oh. Yay, Liz.
So can you start my top watch?
Well, thank you for being here tonight. This is not the first time I've gone, but we're happy to share some of the happenings of the 7th day that are going on.
So we're going to talk about our seventh-grade field trip here tonight. We'll add in some of our avid eighth-grade speeches, and then we'll end up with a new concept we're trying to get implemented here at the middle school, our homeroom academy. So I've told that I've got 35 minutes, another 10 minutes of lunch, so I'll try to make it up. To start with, here's a couple of photos that we had. We usually take our seventh grade field trip. I don't know if you're familiar with the curriculum at the middle school, but we've got to do something for the sixth, seventh, and eighth grade at the beginning of the year. Couple in the middle of the year for the seventh grade and eighth grade level, and then at the end of the year we have the same thing for sixth, seventh grade. Our seventh grade trip in the past has been to the Boeing Flight Museum down in Seattle that connected with our science program. This year, Ms. Heller came in and wanted to see if we could switch it up a little bit, so we picked a different destination, and she actually coordinated a train trip for our students to go to Seattle to the Klondike Museum. I've never heard of the Klondike Museum. I don't think any of our students have either, I don't know. But I know the train trip and everything was pretty exciting. So this was the group out in front of the train station that we started out in Mount Vernon. And we went from here down to Seattle. And then they took the bus back up because they came to coordinate with us home. So a couple of photos of home. This was the train station in Seattle where they got off. Mm-hmm. Some photos on the way down there. They didn't like the transition from the train seats to the bus seats on the way down. About the train seats. We did have some activities for them on the crowd. This has been at the Klondike Museum. A couple different action photos of them. When we got down there, they had a little scavenger hunt pre-program that the after students already lined up for us. And then that's just what the difference that shows a goal that was taken from a certain area. So that was our seventh grade field trip this year. We believe it was a success, and we're going to try to do that next year. Next up, we have our avid eighth grade bio poems. A big part of our avid program is getting students to become acquainted with public speaking. I'll let Mr. Shepard talk a little bit more about that, but they presented these to their classes earlier, and I was impressed so much with his talents and models that I wanted to get them out from the way.
Hey, thanks for having us tonight. I brought two students with me, Roshan, and they were both challenged to write a poem, and we called it a bio poem. It had to be about them. That'd be things that they love, and things that maybe they were a little nervous about. And they also wrote about just things that they wanted to see in their future. And so they're going to share those with us. The other program has been just a great program and an opportunity for letting kids have opportunities to speak publicly and make them speak it in our commons area in middle school. And I challenge them to memorize their speech, and they're working on that, and we'll see how this goes. I think it's going to be great. You.
I have a microphone.
You do. Yeah.
Okay.
Go for
it. Lumen. Kind, creative, loving, weird. Child of Mary Margaret and Yon. Lover of my sweet, anxious, cuddly, and curious dog, Luna. Lover of being creative in any way, shape, or form. Supporter of expressing your emotions however you can. Who feels overstimulated in big groups of people, who feels exhausted, overwhelmed, and flooded by the amount of homework assigned, who feels loved by their friends and family, who fears that one or both of their pet rabbits will escape and never come back home, who fears losing friends or family through a tragic accident like car crash or drowning while swimming alone, who fears spiders crawling into their nose or mouth while they sleep, who would like to see a robot designed to clean their room, fold, and put away their laundry while they're in school, who would like to see the trash in the oceans freely decreasing, who would like to see their sister's rabbit not run into her big cage when someone walks up the big pen. Resident of 91 McGinley Road, the Little Blue House, which is within walking distance of a pretty beach, that one.
Lucian, curious, dedicated, ambitious, productive. Son of Madam Heather. Lover of chess, the ultimate IQ test of origin. Lover of the adventure zone, the outstanding Dungeons and Dragons inspired series of graphic novels. Lover of anything Rick Riordan, the person who popularized Greek mythology. Who feels thrilled when the latest theater production starts so that he can participate in tech field. Who feels crushed when he acquires a lousy grade on an assignment. Who feels extremely prepared when he does masters in original Dungeons and Dragons campaign. Who fears some of Stephen King's more strangely realistic stories. Who fears tech going terribly amiss during a theater performance. Who fears this exact situation happening. Who'd like to see more individuals and growth in astrophysics. Who'd like to see himself polishing up his coding skills. Who'd like to see more people trying to accomplish their dreams. Resident of the Virgo supercluster, Axling.
I just wanted to say the Abbott group just had a field trip, 7th and 8th grade, and these two, I could not get them out of the library. It was absolutely awesome.
Like almost an hour. I got lost.
Good job.
Thank
well,
you.
Well,
what
did you go? Went to Western?
We went to, yeah, we went to Western, but went to my mother just left me. We started out Gadget Valley first, which we hadn't been there before. We've been several college field trips, just to get in the feel of what college is going to look like and kind of take, break down some of those barriers. We love going to Western because we got good lunch.
And last year, we went to Walk Comes Well as Western.
Awesome.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Avid is a big part of the middle school culture in our curriculum, our program. It's a program that's working because I think it is so embedded in all of the field trips, along with standalone events, both Lucian and Lumen are part of an Avid elective class. But we also have Avid school wide, so we do a lot of things that are run throughout the school that combine with some of the things that we're trying to do in the Avid elective classes. One of those things that we've introduced, don't have to finish my friends with the win. But another concept that we used to try to roll out some of our Avid skills and principles was a concept of homerooms a couple years ago. I think we presented that to you at the beginning of last year as part of our school improvement plan. We've tweaked homeroom a little bit. We've tried to build on it each year. And the first step we took was we added grade level teachers to teach the students that they were working with. So instead of having just our advisory teachers who had level classes that we keep that class the same throughout our school or throughout the middle school year so they get familiar with a certain teacher. We thought that might be a way to start our homerooms, but we found that those kids weren't really connecting with them academically. So we did a little bit better this year. We introduced having seventh grade teachers have seventh grade homerooms, so at least they were aware of the content and the curriculum that they were working with. But what we still found was that we're not able to connect with kids in specific content areas. So if you were lucky enough to have a seventh grade English teacher as your homeroom teacher, you could get some specific help with English during your homeroom, or you had to go see that teacher. Both of those weren't really efficient or practical. We found that kids going back and forth, you just weren't getting enough time. So we're trying to step up our game here with homeroom a little bit, and we're going to do a little trial run with what we're going to call homeroom academy. So this is just a little bit of an explanation of what that should look like. So our purpose for homeroom academy. We're trying to provide those tier two and tier three interventions that we can't really get to on a daily basis as much as we'd like. And we're trying to use some of our homeroom time to make that happen specifically in the areas of it's going to look like. We'll still have our regular homeroom days twice a week. So we run an A-day, B-day schedule for the school to get our electives in. It's kind of complicated to explain in like 35 minutes that I have, so I'll try to keep that down. But on our A-days, we'll have regular homeroom days for a certain number of classes, and then on our B-days, they'll rotate. So 2 days a week, they're going to get their regular homeroom as they see it now, and 2 days a week, they'll get to go to what we call our academy. The emphasis, though, in the academy days is that we will be able to provide to a small group of students math and English support. We're trying to keep those numbers at no larger than 10. And then those students that don't really need that extra help or desire that extra help will still have access to their regular home. The problem that we had with that was when we mix those students around, we make some groups smaller than the others, we run the balance of the home groups changes, and to get our content area teachers to be able to teach them, we had some logistical problems that we had to deal with. Part of it was the schedule. So that schedule, that not when we access that. That's okay. So for our sixth grade level, it worked out pretty well because both Mr. Duke and Mr. Ramsey teach math and English at the sixth grade level, and all those students could see them. Where we ran into trouble was at the seventh and eighth grade level, where both Mr. Lopez and Mr. McKinnon are our math and English teachers for both the seventh grade and the eighth grade. So we had to figure out a way to mix and match kids and take them out of Lopez and McKinnon's homerooms and be able to get them where they needed to go and also still run the academy. So to do that, we had to shuffle some things around. So Mr. McKinnon and Mr. Lopez won't be teaching anything but an academy type class. One day it'll be an eighth grade academy, one day it'll be a seventh grade academy. But that means someone had to absorb their homeroom kids that we currently have. So we kind of got that figured all out. That's just a little bit of their schedule. To make that happen, we're going to list some help from some of our parents. And we think we've got it figured out. We're going to roll this out. We're going to try it on Monday. And quite a lively discussion again today because one of the last things they had to deal with. The green one. One more. You are so good. Our biggest hurdle so far has been that signing up and tracking attendance. And really, why we didn't start this earlier is we couldn't find a way to make all this mixing and matching happen. And to let alone the schedule part, we'll get that figured out. Then, how do we keep track of the kids? And it's a little bit complicated to explain all in one shot here, but we have some difficulty with it. But as I was explaining this to my colleague, Ms. Hillman, the other day, she said, I think I've got a solution for you. And so on regular days, we still take tennis to Skyward, which is no big deal because the kids on the move. But when we go to academy days, we've got to have kids going to different places, and different teachers that they're currently assigned with. Still got to keep track of them. Believe it or not, middle school kids may not go where we so if you just open up, and I'm just showing you this, I need to give Andrea some good here because this really did solve our problem. We still had quite a lively discussion about today. They all weren't quite sold on this, but it's the best we can come up with. It's pretty cool. So we had trouble with moving kids around and getting to places and not double signing and everything. And we said, well, I think here's a way we can solve that with what they call the delinquent. So let's. And so what happens is we had to kind of hide the names because we didn't want to show them in public. But we have a list of names over here. And then when I click on this drop-down menu, the list of all the students in 67th grade show up, and I can pop them in. So I can see who's left that needs to be reassigned. I can see where they're going to go. And now they're going to attend. So when I'm a teacher, so Mr. Ramsey can go in on the academy day, open it up, and you can see the number of students and who they are that are supposed to be on that day. We still have to then take that attendance and go back to the
Saturn, so it's going to be a little bit of a difficult problem. Probably going to Miss Kane a couple coffee cards ready to do a little extra work for us. And again, I think I'm saying all this because to make this happen, our staff really is going out of their way to do a couple of extra things to give some extra help to these kiddos. And it's just, I wanted to give them a recognition of, I don't know that we would be able to, you know, do this anyplace else. The staff we work with here, I'm a little biased, but it's worked for them today. But I'm going to smoke because they did a great job when it comes to trying. We're pretty excited. But we got the attendance problem at least to where we can manage it, try to roll it out. Like I said, on Thursday, we're going to try this. Our chief staff to make this happen. They've got to become familiar with that schedule. They've got to make sure they can locate the academy attendance sheet. They can't forget this time. Those kids up ahead of time, so we can do that and where they're supposed to go. I'll be able to help them with that, I think, though. And we'll get ready for that first day. And then ongoing as anything new, as you get started with something new when you are trying it, you know, we have a lot of questions still. We had, like I said, a pretty lively discussion today. Just about the attendance sheet still, and we came to the conclusion that, hey, we just got to try this and get going. It's either going to work or it's not. The beauty about it is if it's not working for us, we can just go back to our old home schedule. Nothing's hurt. But if it works, we're pretty excited about the Tier 2 and Tier 3 support that we can provide for group of students on a daily basis. So we're happy to see that happen. We just had a cool picture. That's why the fish is on your table.
I was just going to ask. Is that
the it's not the one. Thank you for your time. But any questions about what's going on in the table? I think those are the group five. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ron.
Okay, next up. Stuart West, Fire Building. Dave, you're up, Noel.
Hello, everybody. Thanks again for seeing me. I'm back with hat in hand. First, I want to say thanks for letting us explore the feasibility of putting the fire station on the school property on Stuart Island West. We looked at the location I'd really originally discussed with you all. We were looking at the northwest corner of the property. Mm-hmm. It turns out the contour lines and the actual site itself, it's a bit of a ravine. And thank you for that up. So the top left corner here, you can see how the contour lines drop. And it ends up being a pretty significant drop in elevation. Mm-hmm. It would not be feasible to put a fire station there just because of that drop. So back to the drawing board, which is why I'm here. My hope is that the board would consider us looking at a different location. It's a more prominent location on the roadside, and it is much more feasible in terms of access, being on the road frontage. We don't need to build a driveway in. It's a less impact to the neighbors to the north and the west. And that's why I'm here. I'm hoping you'd be willing to consider it. I went ahead and put a sketch together. This isn't the exact location it would be, but this is the idea. So this represents a 35 by 30 footprint for a fire station. We got an electrical box for the solar array that would go on. It's probably smaller than that. And we are adding a covered area if that is feasible for the school board. And this would show what a 10,000 gallon water tank footprint would look like. Mm-hmm. That's the existing school, and there's a building next to it. We did look at another site off of the drop in the elevation, which could fit. It wouldn't impact the field, but again, that requires some driveway access and would not be ideal in terms of overall access and impact to the neighbors and what have you. So I'm here to ask if the school board is willing to allow the fire district to continue to explore this idea so that you know, we continue the feasibility and maybe you're open to it. begin negotiation for a lease agreement with the school. It would be a long-term lease, and then go from there.
About two water tanks.
That shows what two would look like. I think well, a single 10 would be enough.
Yeah. So is it, you said that's not the exact location. You think it's closer to the school? Because there's buildings on this side too. You've got
the
museum and the library over here. I'm trying to figure out how close it's going to be to those.
So, you know, this is really, it's entirely up to the board and the school. I think, you know, depending on where the site would be, we could go further to the corner in this end. It doesn't have to be just right here. And that's why I indicated the arrows. We can adjust this thing. It really, it's about the road frontage. One of the things we would pursue with the county's is a variance to have the building right up next to the road, which would impact as little as possible of the school property.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can green light this, then you know Fred and I can talk about it nuts and bolts a little deeper and really determine a site specific that would work for the school. Again, you know, we're hand in hand on this. So the only reason we're pursuing it is the board is so far open to discussing it. And it's really entirely up to you if that's even workable.
So I see the property line on that side. Where is it on the other side? How far into this lot is the school building? I see that property line.
Yeah, and then you have this one there.
Yeah, but where's the other one?
The one's over.
I don't think so. I think the school isn't quite. I'd have to go get our supply. I don't think the school building is on our property. Correct, Diana? Do you have that?
I don't think it is.
It seemed like when we purchased, so we need to give you some more information, don't we? We need to pull it out and show it to you. This is all from memory, but it seems like the school site itself.
This is another rendition that shows it as an aerial photograph.
Yeah. I think the school site itself was on that
trust property. Then.
Right. And then when the field was something we purchased along with it later. So the field is school property. So where he's got that identified as a potential.
Mm-hmm.
Can you go to that aerial picture again?
We kind of come in from the school from over here anyway, right? I mean, we don't really.
Well, the road comes right there, just right at the edge there. That's what turns into the school. Those buildings are right just beyond the right hand side.
That you're talking about the original school, the schoolhouse, that old library and that court. Yeah.
Yeah, so we come in from up there anyway, so I don't see that being a huge impact. And I kind of like the idea of it not even have to mess with the field now.
Yeah. And I don't know if there's any, like, we can scooch all the ways.
That's what I don't have to say. Why not just go ahead and, you know, put that tank right up to the hill where it starts to slip down.
Yep.
And then, yeah, that makes
sense. Or you could even orient it this way with the tanks behind the building.
Yeah, that's all extra. This is, you know, however if you're amenable to a covered area. The idea of the covered area is really a training and rest area. And that would be to another community benefit too. I mean, it would be open to folks that I don't know how familiar you are, but I think you know there's a lot of foot traffic that comes through here.
A lot.
Yeah, they do fundraising over by the old schoolhouse for the community, but it just gives folks, we'll have some seating and covered area for folks to take a break when they don't realize what they were getting into and they love their yacht.
And can we go back to that other picture again? Mm-hmm. So you can see where it slopes off there. It seems like we maybe put the tank in that old nook there and move the building up against that one. It's just kind of be a little
as far as tuck it in as much as possible.
Go all the way over the corner.
Yeah.
Because no matter what, it takes a bunch of clearing.
Yeah, it will take clearing wherever we do the site and prevent us.
But I do like it because that would really have an impact in the field and stuff. I kind of like all this a little better, actually. And again, because we kind of enter from over here anyway, most of the kids and everything. So it's kind of two separate entrances and everything.
Yeah, on either side of the property.
Yeah,
I like that idea.
Yeah, and it, you know, whenever you get from the county, where it starts, you know, it's close to the road you can get to.
Yeah, that's what we would definitely do that. So, you know, once we have an agreement, screen light it, we'll go through permitting. get a variance for site location, and start our architect design and all the things we got to do as a government agency.
Oh, the capital.
You want to know what the teacher asked?
Yeah.
The teacher out there asked, you have a field. I bet you want you to talk them into putting in a bathroom. They can use a drain field. The field has a drain field. Oh. Tell them to put in a septic.
Funny.
So you're tired of using downtown. What would the fire station do for us?
Well, that's all negotiable, friend.
We can pump down there. Green light,
I'm all down. Get there. It's, you know, this can be a benefit for more than one purpose, which is clearly we're doing it for the fire brigades out there to build a fire department response. But I see fire stations as community assets. So,
yeah. If you don't get the variance, then what would be the strategy for getting the vehicles in and out?
I think we will get it. Okay. I mean, I'll go in and hammer that one.
It's just how far you have to set the building back off the road. Yeah. How, like, will they have to go into the field? The setback off the road is a problem.
If they say 16 feet, then what?
Right. And we could spin it, maybe turn the station at a different angle so that the approach is a little different. Or if it's really that big a problem, maybe we go to a single garage door and say we shrink the size a little bit. But yeah, how, you know, like I said, I'm your huckleberry on this project. I'm only here because you're willing to hear us.
So when does your money disappear?
So we do have, it's a good question, we have budgeted this year some seed money to start design. And
I thought you had a grant. And
so nope, this is all coming out of coffers. So, you know, if there's grants available, we'll pursue them. But right now, it's not shovel ready. It's still a concept. So.
Because I get more value claps coming from them. Of course, I've got the grant, we call it a grant, but it's money coming from
The taxpayers.
Yeah. Is solar going on top of the station?
Yeah, and that was, thanks for asking that. That was another reason why the bottom of the ravine would work here. Once there's some minor clearing for the site improvement, there's good sunlight there through the part of the bay. So we'll actually be able to charge. And that's part of the credit for a fire station. So the other reason for this is needing the Washington Survey and Ratings Bureau stats. That's the organization that sets the underwriters for insurance. And in order to consider a fire station in a protection area, it has to be a station, it has to have water, it has to have heating to protect the fire equipment. And it's just this checklist of things that the state sets in order to credit it as a fire station. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't do a solar array. It would just be a garage, but we have to heat it.
Mm-hmm. Is solar an unintegrated generator for taking care of, like, for pumping water?
I don't think so. It'll all be, because all the pumps are gas powered. We just do that.
The building example that I'm looking at has the roof sloping away from the south. So the panels, I assume, are going to be almost straight up and down.
Yeah, that's concept. That was to give you an idea of what we're looking at. That's not the actual design, but okay. I wanted to show that we're gonna strive for a very nice product. In terms of architecture and design, we want it to fit within the community. And I know there's a lot of good architecture out there now, so we didn't want to put a metal building.
The wood design so matching the school.
Yeah, exactly. And that would be something we would definitely consider the design. Let's make it fit the property. Mm-hmm. So it looks like it's not an afterthought.
Do you take action because it's a change of placement, or is it? Did we agree to a specific placement last time?
No, we did not. I think we just said that we would go ahead and pursue more information from you, which we're now getting. I would like to see more finalized once you've had the county permission, once you've got the variance, once you've got all the things you want, then we'll take another vote on it. But at this point, just keep working it. I don't see why it wouldn't be a viable thing somehow.
Can I ask that we strike a lease agreement before we go into anything that will start costing the district money?
The fire district or the school district? It's not going to cost us anything.
That's it's all before we start investing money in like design, permitting and stuff, I'd like to see us in a lease.
I think we need to have you need to take action. Whether we, if you agree that this is a good idea to put it on the school property, then you're agreeing that we start a lease
somewhere on the school property. We need to know how many square foot feet your project is going to be, and how much you want from us. But we need that before we can do a lease, I think. What does anybody else think?
Sounds reasonable, Bart. Yeah.
As well, right? There are probably many things that.
Yeah, but
there's a whole lot. Can we say we're agreeable to a lease?
Up to so many.
At this current rendition, I don't know how to word it exactly, but I don't know if we. I know what he's saying. He needs to be able to tell people, yes, we have a secure property that place, so we now get the plan. But we want to know what they're actually going to do before we give them a lease. So I get the conflict. But we
that's
have to, one of us needs to have a lease.
The nice thing with the lease is we could draft a lease that stipulates some of the benchmarks. Mm-hmm. So we can strike the lease. That way I'm secure knowing, hey, this they're for real. They're willing to really look into this. And then we can design it such a way that pending, a review, and we can back out of the lease anytime if you don't like it. But the lease gives me the leeway to actually spend some money. Mm-hmm. If I don't have a lease, then I can't really justify.
County's not going to listen to you.
I don't know how soon. I mean, is that something the board would have to approve? Like, so you draw something up, give it to him. I don't know.
I'm happy to have our attorney take a stab at it, work with Fred if you guys are okay with that.
But it'd probably be a month before we can actually approve it, I think.
We can have it.
Can we call a special for it?
It doesn't have to be hasty. I've got a lot on plate, so. Okay.
I think that'd be great if you're willing to have your guys draw something that we can review, and then from there we can kind of work off. Okay. All right, this makes sense or this doesn't.
And then if I have questions.
When we say lease, we're talking about a dollar a year? Or are we just.
That's up to you. I think there should be some meat on the bone. I would suggest that it would be a fair value. I mean,
but this is more of a community project.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's
not a money making.
No, it's about just if we have to do something to give it opportunities, start formalizing the plan with benchmarks, and it's at least for you to be able to start the work.
Yep.
It's not about, it's not, yeah, it'd be like a dollar. It's not about money at this point.
So it'd be more like an easement.
Except then you're giving it up, and we're not giving it up. It's still going to be.
I think long term leases.
Yeah.
Long term leases, the way to go on it.
Yeah. We have some of these in place already with some other properties, but we have stations.
And we might want to discuss operational costs of things over there, mowing around and stuff like that. There might be some things that'll take a little bit more to cost for us for the building to be there. So there might be a little bit of. Anytime you build something, you got to work around it more, even though it seems like we're just mowing or something like that, but there might be.
Yeah.
Some operational impacts we should consider in the lease, I would think about as well.
Labor as opposed to cash.
Mm-hmm. Or just whatever. It works. Or us, just bringing some money to make sure we can maintain around it as well.
So, Diana, can you put that on the agenda for an action item for next month? If you think you could have the lease agreement potential, at least for the draft.
I'll give our attorney a call and we'll put something together and make sure there's.
Okay.
Very clear benchmarks in it, and it's easy to escape if things aren't going to work it out. So,
I think everybody's in favor of it.
Absolutely. It's just always just kind of, like when you have like, well, it may be this way or maybe.
I
don't think it's that bad.
Well, this will green light me to actually get out there and get tape on the ground and really start looking at what it's going to like, how many trees are cut down. If there's several trees that come down. Mm-hmm. And we can really cite it, get the county going, and see about the variance, and we'll start moving along. We're not in a huge rush, so this is a matter of just process.
Mm-hmm. Can you get it done in my lifetime?
Well, yeah. I hope so. All right. I have enough direction on that.
Yeah,
I'm good.
Okay. You and I will stay in touch with each other over the next month.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Looks pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, it does. All right, Fred, you're up. Your superintendent's report.
Well, a lot of things that hopefully I'll be able to talk with TJ when he talks about the state, the legislative stuff tonight. So I'll wait until then. So the only thing I really want to talk about, Barbara and I got a chance again to go to, they called the Small School Conference. She's part of the Small School Alliance. No, Small School Coalition.
Yeah.
The other one's called the Rural Alliance.
The Rural School.
Rural.
That's the good one.
I think Sarah made them change that name. They don't use the word rural anymore.
No, that's not true. The other thing is called the Rural Alliance.
And
this is a Small School Coalition. Yeah. There's two different groups. Anyway, it's not rural. It's small. But I gotta tell you, I think that this has always been, I don't think it was as good as this year as it has been in the past, but I do think it is important. It's one thing that I think is important to attend, because it seems like I always find out what other small schools are struggling with. And what I do want to say is, even though you're talking about all the things I learned there, I just want to make sure that you guys publicly hear that when you come back, you know, Bob and Sarah have gone there in the past and said things like, you know, we are so fortunate that we have the board with you. We do, you know, we work together really well. I want to go from the school side and talk about what some superintendents and a principal, there was one principal, what we offer our students and then what students do, not just that we offer, but how they excel. This I got into Washington, you know, that we're far and above most of the small schools and many schools in the state of Washington. It floors me when they talk about some of the things and I go, oh yeah, our kids did that. And then you start realizing what our, and you said it to Robert and speaking, like, oh my God, I don't remember writing an essay in fourth grade. You know, what kids do and what we expect our students to do in this school, I think they come back, which may well too, at 28 years old, oh my God, I really set up well. She might do it by the end of next year when she, you know, leaves and says, man, I was prepared. And it reinforced it more than ever. And then I was in one conversation with a group of people, and they were talking about frustration with some of the staff not wanting to do certain things. And I'm going, yeah, you know, our staff is amazing. You can go talk to them. Principal here, and they'll talk about how much care our staff have for what they do, and I thought it was amazing. And I also want to end by saying that was reinforced the Friday before when I traveled with Mia's cohort on the as the legislative rep. She went to the student rep meeting over in Anacortes, and on the way back, I asked her the direct question. So what's your favorite class? Because I, you know, just trying to make conversation. And I didn't get science, math, English, or what she got. She said, I can't tell you. She said, what's so amazing about all our teachers is they're so passionate about their subject. Every single one of them are just fun. She said, yes, not just fun. They're challenging. She said, it's not that I have my personal likes. These are her words. I'm like, I have my personal likes. I like this more than this. Which may be different than what Mia likes, because Mia may not be the same type of, you know, like that same kind of stuff as Vera. But that comment blew me away that, you know, we do have passionate people in our classrooms, and that's what makes our school so good, in my opinion. And that was reinforced at Small School Assembly. And I thought that needed to be said publicly. We're pretty fortunate to have educational opportunities for the kids on this island that we do. And that's all I have.
Okay.
Because Rod took so long, I had to catch up.
Okay, ma'am, you're up.
Okay. Just kind of, I feel like I have to say something because I am a student and he's a writer. We are super fortunate. So I just want to thank all of you guys. Very fortunate. And I'm happy I get to be a part of this board.
The most important part of that whole statement that she just said is she said, he is right.
Okay, so for the ASB report, starting off today, all of the local scholarships opened for our seniors.
So it's a big deal. We have 42, I think, 42 or 43 scholarships this year. Last year, they gave over $500,000. So it's a big deal. It's super important. And the deadline is April 23rd for most of them. So keep the CMUs in your thoughts because we will be very, very busy. Be ready for the emails for letters of recommendation. Mr. Woods, I'll be emailing you soon. And we also had our senior versus staff basketball game, if you guys didn't know already. And we raised $18,000 for the grad night. So not only was the I know, it's a lot. When I heard that today, because I was doing my research, and I was like, that's a lot of money. That's a lot. So we're super fortunate to have that capability. But I also think the best part of that game, obviously, because the seniors won, which makes sense. But the best part was just, like, the community. Like, it's not something that schools do, like, senior versus staff. And being able to play with Mr. McKinnon, my favorite middle school teacher, and Mr. Woods was, like, awesome. Like, it was super cool. So I'm just grateful to have opportunities like that. And I also think it's fun for the younger kids. Like, I remember that was a big part of my childhood, was going to watch the game. So it was a big deal, and I'm sad it's over. But, yeah, super cool for the community. We also had our surge dance, which is, like, I see it more as, like, the casual school dance. Like, it's not really fancy wear a dress. It's more you can wear your shorts and a t-shirt. So that's why it's the best one. And it was a country theme. So that was super fun. Definitely brought out a lot of the kids. It was cool dancing with some of the freshmen. I thought it was funny. And yeah, that also brought in some good money for ASB, which is really important. And then moving on, our Key Club, which I feel like I talk about every time I'm here, but our Key Club worked with the food bank again. But this time it was super cool because rather than doing like a fundraiser with food cans and whatnot, we actually cleaned it from head to toe. So we went in last Saturday and we spent a little over, I think it was like 2 hours probably. And we took everything off the shelves, scrubbed it, scrubbed all the trash cans, everything. So that was super cool. The lady there, Linda, I believe her name is, she was just super grateful. And it was kind of one of those things where when you think food bank, you think, oh, like we need to help them get more food, like just the basics. But it was cool knowing that, like, the students, the kids, it was like freshmen, sophomores, everyone were able to help with one of the things you don't really think help with. So that was super cool. And we made an agreement with them. We're going to make it like a bi-monthly thing. So we'll be there every couple months to do that. So yeah, our Key Club is doing really great things. And so are a lot of the other clubs. So yeah, that's all I have for you guys today.
Thank you.
Any
Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah. Where is prom?
Prom is April 26th, I believe. So a month from today.
Where?
Brickworks. Yeah, Brickworks.
Did you score any points in the basketball game?
Yeah, I did none, actually. So.
Yes, you did.
I did.
Hopefully a few were over Fred.
I was going to say, were you guarding her first?
I did. Got to guard him for a little bit.
I didn't want to embarrass her. Oh.
That's right. Thank you very much. So now we have Ms. Aileen Howe with the approval, or we're going to approve the highly capable program after she presents it to us. Yeah. Thank you.
I'll clean over here. So I'm Aileen Howe, and I asked Diana if I should make a colorful PowerPoint, and she said no. So I'm just going to tell you verbally. So for the highly capable program, there have been no changes to the policy or procedure. We went through that last year and updated all of that. So just here to kind of update you a little bit about our plan in our program. Work with Dr. Becky. And then Amara helped this year as well. She was the previous program coordinator, so she was able to join us and help a little bit as well. As you know, embedded in the laws surrounding education is the requirement that we provide a program for highly capable students as part, and it's part of their basic access to education. So we have to provide access to accelerated learning or enhanced instruction. What we have done, we have referral forms available on the website. We can accept those at any time. And then we also kind of annually reach out to all the staff or teachers and try to solicit some referrals for students. What we do then is we look at all the referral forms. We look at we look at, for each of those students, we look at their work samples or we look at their test scores. And then beyond that, we also do some universal screening. So we had selected two grades in the past. We have second grade and fifth grade, because it has to be between before sixth grade. We have to select two grades. And we look at all of the standardized testing scores, and we look for students that have reached or exceeded that 95th percentile. So once we have those names, then I followed up as well with the teachers and asked if they wanted to continue to refer them, and we wanted to look at more work samples and whatnot for those students. We had kind of a bumper crop this year. Last year, we had a total of 24 students in our program, and this year with our we had a lot of great referrals, and we did the screening, and we have 10 new students just from the elementary school. So that was pretty exciting. It'll bring our total of the school body population to 4% of the population, if they all accept, will be enrolled in high top. And then once parents give our permission, then we identify them as second skyward so that teachers can recognize which students kind of have been noted to be highly capable and may need accelerated instruction or advanced learning opportunities. I've talked with some of the second grade teachers of how they're doing that, and that's been pretty wonderful to be able to see as well, to go in and observe and see how some students are working at a slightly different pace or different level than their peers. Mm-hmm. K through eight, the highly capable program relies on that inclusion model and really on that differentiation from the grade level teachers. But in the high school, some of our students take AP courses, independent studies. They do the dual enrollment, or they might take a class through Griffin Bay that allows for that accelerated instruction. And we also share the information or the names of the students that are in the highly capable program with all the counselors and principals, so they can help guide those students towards those AP classes or other classes that might be challenging. The challenge, I would say, one of the challenges with the program is that we are such a small district, and we have now 35 students or 34 students K through 12. And finding ways to meet all their needs. Larger districts would have different programs. They have different classes. They might have a separate school for the gifted. We're trying to meet the needs of all of those students with a pretty small budget. So we've been pretty creative about how we've used that money in the past. We've paid for professional development for some of the teachers that are teaching the AP courses or doing advanced courses. Stephen Ramsey did a STEAM course at two or three summers ago that he offered kind of first enrollment for the highly capable students and then opened it up to other students as well. And that was a summer enrichment course that he did. Michael McKinney and Christy Putney looked at all sorts of different reading recommendations, and we compiled a list of books we wanted to try to access, kind of give students access beyond the school day. So we provided a free book from our list from Harvard. We kind of assembled it through a couple different recommendations from Harvard and Johns Hopkins. And then last year, we also did take-home activity kits that were kind of explored a couple different options. There was biology, there was STEAM kits, there was a coding robot that we could offer, and then students were able to select from those and work on those over the summer. And then we also partnered with the Johns Hopkins, or we didn't partner, I should say. The Johns Hopkins was a Center for Talented Youth for gifted students. And we encouraged our highly capable students to apply, and we paid for the application and entrance exams for students that wanted to apply. We had 7 students that did that and did a course over the summer. One was Project Mars, and I think he was a 5th grader when he did that one, which is pretty exciting. And a couple of the other students did more kind of STEM robotic courses that they worked on. We're still trying to kind of figure out what that would look like, how we can best meet the needs of those 34 individual students, but also do it in a way that's sustainable. So we're open to ideas if you have any. And I think Jose let me know today we have about $14,000 for this program this year. So we are kind of thinking about what that will look like. So I'll work with the administrative team and Becky and Amara to see if we have any ideas. Last year, we did solicit feedback from parents, and it's challenging. I would say because the feedback we got was very conflicting. Some of them didn't want any additional work or any additional programs outside of the school day. They said they're already so busy. They wanted everything to happen during the school day. Other teachers said they wanted something totally different, and they wanted them after school, or they wanted less STEAM and more theater and literature. And so trying to meet the needs of all those students and all those expectations is kind of, I guess, an interesting challenge that we'll just continue to kind of hopefully try to move as the program grows. Now we have many more students in the elementary school, so might be talking with Holly and kind of figuring out what that might look like now that we've got a larger group. Last year, we mostly had siblings, So it didn't really make sense to try to start a program or a club. But now we have a few more, so maybe that's a little bit of interest. So, and then lastly, I think what I just have to say is that we have completed all the assurances for OSPI that we are legally compliant and that this program is following the policy and procedures that we approved last year. Any questions?
We did good.
That was awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. So could I have a motion to approve the highly capable program?
I move.
John moved.
I'll second.
Melanie seconded. Any discussion? All in favor?
Yes.
Aye. Motion is approved unanimously. Thank you all. Now we have Dr. Bell with Workforce Mental Health Committee report. This is just for information only. So make it snappy.
Super, Dr. Bell.
This is super snappy. Wait, what did I say snappy? This is related to policy 5515, that workforce secondary traumatic stress policy or procedure. We meet annually, and the committee really consists of the counselor consortium, which has some classified and certified staff, the school counselors, therapy, that group. And then I also review it with the administrators in our administrator meetings. Not a lot changed. We're still working on the same goals as last time. We're trying to improve access or make sure staff know about our EAP program. That's the employee assistance program. We now have 17, Faith and I counted 17 staff members utilizing the EAP program. So Faith, through HR, has been pushing out EAP information to staff, reminding staff that you can access this for free, and staff are using it, the EAP. It's pretty nifty. I don't know if you know about EAP, but you call, tell them what the issue or problem is, and they connect you with resources. And then we also are monitoring the climate survey. So there were two questions we've been monitoring, and one of the components of the climate survey, one of the statements says, "I'm generally able to manage my stress and maintain a healthy work-life balance." In 2021-22, 48.7 of the staff noted they agree or strongly agree. In 2023-24, last year, that went all the way up to 96.2 agree or strongly agree with that statement that they're generally able to manage stress and maintain healthy work life. The other statement in the climate survey we've been monitoring is whether or not they're proud of working at SJISD. And in 21-22, 92% agreed or strongly agreed. And in 23-24, 100% did. So that they're proud of working at SJISD. So the plan's working, staff's improving, and we monitor that. So there you go. Any questions about that? If you ever want to know what the secondary traumatic stress is, OSPI has a definition on their website. But it's basically that secondary stress related to the job and empathy with the people. Any questions?
Okay, one. The statement, first sentence under policy statement, district will promote a positive workforce climate that includes a focus on diversity and inclusion. Doesn't seem to have anything to do with the secondary traumatic stress policy. It seems like a generic statement. Is there any way we could move that elsewhere in the document?
In the policy itself?
It doesn't seem like a statement that is relevant to secondary traumatic stress. Well,
interesting, and I think wasn't that just that came directly from WASDA when you guys reviewed it. So
it's the first bullet one. It's first sentence right under policy statement.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to hide it. I'm just wondering if there's a better place to locate that sentence.
That's a great question. I think I wonder if they were trying to point out when WASDA recommended some of that wording that our staff, we do include our staff, no matter who they are, what their needs are, we're working with them. But yeah, good question.
When did we approve it?
2020.
Can you scroll up, Diana?
Oh,
I think the inclusion statement is the important part of that, PGA, in that providing resources and pathways for staff to work in a healthy environment is the definition of inclusion. Like, that's what I think the relationship is. I think you get thrown off by the diversity part in that group of staff. That's how I read it.
Okay, do we want to take a look at this one for renewal next month with some possible thoughts on changes?
Do you want to reword it, Marie, for next month?
Yeah.
Have Jeremy the contact, work with you on this, or work with Fred, or like, how do we reword this?
One first step could be I could double check if WASA has updated and we haven't updated it since.
Okay.
And then I can email the board and let you guys know that too.
Okay. That'd be cool. Thanks, Diana.
Yeah, that's super smart. Okay.
Yeah, because that was never brought up in any of our committee meetings. We reviewed it. We're like, yeah, we're on track. This looks great. Here's some little statistics.
Thanks, Dr. Bell.
Thank you. On to lid acceptance for re-siding project. Do we have any?
We do, but I'm going to ask you, I know you guys will love to hear this, but I'm going to ask when we get to board calendar that we, I'm going to suggest that we have a quick mid-day meeting next week, because I would like to get it accomplished and sent and let the company know
before we
break, so we can start doing this. Okay. We're not through the vetting process yet. There are a couple things that we have to ask questions on. A little higher than we wanted, but not impossible to do. But I want to be able to present that to you in a knowledgeable way, how we would pay for it. So
yeah, this was pretty tight.
It was a pretty tight window. We got a little bit more good, but we did open the packets today, and there is a lower one that meets all the criteria. But there's nothing that's no exclusion. Yeah. So I'm going to suggest that probably we can get to the calendar and then find out what dates are available for you. I just want to do it before by Thursday, and that's actually by Wednesday if possible.
Okay. Okay.
But that's where we are. I don't want to talk beyond that. There's still some things to work out.
Thanks. So next up is the consent agenda. And normally I get to say first we accept with gratitude donations. Only my hand. So can I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Melanie moved.
I will second.
DJ seconded. Any discussion on anything that came up in there except the absolutely frightening $41,000 Opelco bill? Okay. All in favor?
Yeah.
Unanimous. Thank you. Jose, it's your turn.
So enrollment, even though we lost a couple kids last month, a couple FTEs, we're still holding right on, pretty much on par with our budgeted enrollment. And the number that I look at, and I'll zoom in a little bit, is that building enrollment number. That's the money we get and we get to keep to fund our program. The running start is money in, money out. So even though it looks like we're a little bit over total enrollment, that running start increase doesn't do us any good. And so we had budgeted 787, we're at 788. And even with the slight drop in the month of March down to 784, that should tide us to the end of the year to be pretty much on par with what we budgeted for the year and not lose any funding due to enrollment changes. And the official K3 count is 16.97, so we're maximizing that. Again, that hasn't changed last month. And our special ed is 17.8% of our students. And the reason that's important is because we are waiting to see what actually happens with the legislature now that the budgets are in and have to reconcile to each chamber of legislature, whether that number will, the max number of students will remain at 16, or if it will increase to over a couple of years to go away or just go away completely. Those are the three options on the table. Any questions on enrollment?
Nope.
Any questions on the funds other than general fund? And there's, as you can see there, there's not a whole lot of talking points. In fact, there's none. We're kind of in the doldrums in the middle of the year. Things are just kind of settling in, and not much else happening. Nothing to report as far as impacting our budget one way or the other at this point.
Thank you. Anything else? All right, on to board policy changes. We have five of them that we looked at, all second reading from last month, and they're only clarifying and or added language and inserted references from WASDA, nothing earth shaking. First one is 5005, employment and volunteers disclosures, certification requirements, influences and approvals. 5010, non-discrimination and affirmative action. 5400, personnel leaves. 6220, bid or request for proposal requirements, and 6600, transportation. Can I have a motion to approve these policy changes?
Nice one. Good. I'll move.
John moved.
TJ
seconded. Any discussion? Nope. All in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
Okay, on to director reports. Let's start with John.
Do you agree with me? Mm-hmm. I think I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else?
I have nothing.
Okay. DJ?
Well, I'll start, and Jose and Fred can jump in as they'd like. We're on day 73 now of our plan session. At this point, the Senate and the House have introduced their budgets, so that's a lot of paper to look through. I'm not sure if Jose's actually gone through and looked at the details or not. I tried and was overwhelmed. The two bills that we're still tracking, so we started out a couple months ago, everybody was talking about the big three. Mm-hmm. Transportation fell by the wayside pretty quickly. We're now basically with two bills, Senate Bill 5263 and Senate Bill 5192. 5263 is the special ed bill. 5192 is the MSOC bill. MSOC has been watered down considerably since we first started the process. The House bill that was introduced, I've talked about this before, was going to allow a 20% increase in funding for MSOC expenses. This bill originally was 10%. I believe it's been cut even further. So we should get some money from the state for MSOC, which, we're grateful for. It's not going to be nearly enough. The special ed bill that we're looking at, as Jose said, there's a provision in there to remove the 16% cap, which basically would mean this month we're at 17%. So under the current law, we would not get that extra percent. There are some districts such as Locas that are way above 16% right now that would be greatly impacted by this. So until they finish and we actually get this through, we don't know if they're going to remove it, if it's going to be on a graduated schedule for removal, or what they're going to do. That's the problem. It does look like we will get additional funding for special ed, which is good. The modifier is going up.
Multiplier,
thank you. Multiplier is going up, so that'll help us as well. Excuse me. And we're still waiting. Both of those bills went through the House Appropriations Committee last week. They have not moved or been scheduled for a floor vote yet. So that tells me there's still some wheeling and dealing behind the scenes on funding. And once we get that, we'll obviously let everybody know. There are some other bills they announced last week that they've discovered that they have to cut another $840 million over the next 4 years. And that's on top of the 12 to 15, 16 million billion that they're talking about. So at some point, all these bills that we're looking at, as grandiose as everybody wants them to be, are going to get scaled back. And they're also looking at other ways of cutting funding as well. So we're hopeful that we'll get something out of this. I don't know what that's going to look like. I also attended, we had a District 40 legislative session a week ago Saturday. That was at Mount Vernon Library. And I was with about 500 of my closest friends packed into the library room. All three of our legislators showed up. I was impressed with how did everything they're doing. However, I will tell you that none of them seem to know anything about education. Senator Lovelett mentioned at one point she was talking about the special education bill that passed through the Senate, and she mistakenly said the cap currently was 17%, when in fact it's 16%. I don't expect our legislators to know every in and out of every bill, but I think they'd be the first to tell you that they're not keen on or up to date on everything that we're looking at. There's a lot of information they were proud of, and rightfully so. They're trying to get the ferry system straightened out. Transportation in general for the state is going to get more funding at some point. They're also talking about affordable housing. There's some bills out there still that are being discussed about raising additional funding to help build additional housing. I'm not sure how that's going to impact the islands per se, but they were very proud of it. So, it was good to see everybody. I did say hi to Liz. I have not seen her in a long time. It was impossible to get close to the other two legislators because everybody else was getting photos taken and things like that. Did I miss anything?
No, I think only on the sped bill. The sped bill, I think, like you said, the sad thing is there's going to be something coming.
Yeah.
We don't know how much. I mean, even the multipliers did a little bit of a decrease from the original. But it's still an increase from what we get on the multipliers now. And then I think the other one that's in there still is the threshold change. So our safety net could end up meaning a little bit more money if they do drop the cap on the threshold or the threshold limit. And then in the capital projects MSOC one, they do throw in at the bottom a comment about the levy lid left. So that's perfect. I mean, we've heard people say there's going to be a levy lid left, but we've never seen it written out though, like it is now as part of that bill. So it is in a discussion form. So that could be something. And but there's also they seem to be talking a lot about revenue. So they're trying to figure out how to bring in new revenue too. So they have some other tax ideas that looks like that they're bringing into it as well. I don't like kind of like say they. They say any of this money would be set aside for education, but that doesn't specify K-12 education, and I'm biased to say that's where the money should be, is in the K-12 education. That's the paramount duty part of our Constitution. But we do know we do believe that there's going to be, at this point, everything can change by tomorrow, a modicum of an amount of money coming our way, but not enough to solve all sorts of issues, or even make it special education realistic, but it should at least take a bite out of some of the gaps. The MSOC one, honestly, besides the levy lid left, as I know that we don't like using the term Jose, but using budget dust, because there's no such thing as budget dust. Every dollar matters, but it's really, if you use the word significance, I would have to define it to try to determine if that really can be used with the money that would come on it from SOX. But even taking away the cap, even if it doesn't bring a lot of money into us because we're only 1% below or above that cap right now, I mean, it would bring in more money. Maybe $96,000, probably what it would bring in. It's still the right thing to do. Yep. That's the point. It's just the right thing to do because it's a mandate to serve those students in that way, as mandated by federal law. And so, in essence, it becomes an unfunded mandate when they have the cap on it. I believe that we have a good chance of seeing that happen, and that would be kind of a miracle, in my opinion, this this climate that's down there in Olympia right now with the worry of $12 billion to $18 billion that need to be
reduced. And there, as an example of some other cuts they're making, all of us know probably at least one teacher that has a national board certification. And the state's trying to eliminate that payment for those teachers.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, they're telling everybody how important K-12 education is, and then they're trying to take money from teachers. They're trying to enhance their careers and benefit the students. That doesn't seem right to me personally, but I'm not, you know, a legislator, and I have no say in this.
Well, you've said it well, and I think it should be said publicly that what it really does, there are, you get an incentive to be National Board certified and go teach in a high poverty district. But if you take those incentives away, a lot of people are going to move from those high poverty into something that they see as easier. So it's detrimental in the long run.
Yeah.
To do that. I think there's one other thing I want to make sure we point out too. They did seem to put an emphasis so far on keeping TTK or TK, depends on if it was the OSPE or the legislature, what you call it. But the TK program, it looks like they may not have the money to increase it, but we would be in because we already started it. And even though it's not public education funding, ECAP, we've been watching the ECAP closely because that's how we fund the other side of the ELC. And it looks like we're in a position we're going to be able to continue that next year too. In fact, Becky's done a great job of working with ECAP to hopefully start our full day ECAP program even before we end this year. So they'd be going full day, and then we'd be able to do that next year as well.
Yeah. And the next date, I was just double checking to make sure I had this right. I believe the next deadline date is the 2nd of April. And that's when the Senate bills have to get off the House floor. The House bills have to get off the Senate floor. And then a week after that is when they have to have funding, and then we move forward from there. So there's a lot of moving parts right now. Things are going to change between now and when we get to those dates, and we're just waiting to see what happens.
Okay. I went to the conference with Fred Wassa. Were they all small schools?
They were all small schools.
Okay, so a small school superintendent conference, and they have a component for school directors too. The highlight is always this guy named Dan Steele. Unfortunately, he's retiring, but he just kind of puts it all in perspective, and he's the guy that writes Steele, right?
Yep.
But the two takeaways that I got from him was that there's been a lot of McCleary fatigue and paramount duty, and there's enough new people in the legislature now that they're kind of going, but it is our duty, but it is. And it was all, oh, we gave it all to them before, was the attitude in the past. But now they're starting to look at it and like, oh yeah, we're not doing our job. And the other thing that killed me, they talk about the $12 to $18 million deficit or budget shortfall. Every time there's a long session, they come up with huge, huge budget shortfalls. And then as time goes on, they get smaller, 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 smaller. And he said that, you know, they say 12 million or 12 billion, say 15 billion. This is nowhere near that number. They're just, you know, those are the shock numbers, and they're putting them out there for everyone to just go, oh, God. So that was interesting to hear too. And then my part of it, the small schools part, WASDA has taken away their support person for small schools. There isn't going to be one anymore. There's still a small schools coalition. But they say they don't get enough participation by the small schools because they can't afford to go to things like this. They don't have any money to send their people. Like last year for WASDA, Lopez paid each superintendent or school board member paid their own way so they could go. And that's not uncommon anymore for small schools, which is really sad. I'm going to go meet with the Eatonville school district director. She's the head school district person for small schools and talk about what we can do. There's almost 200 small schools, and nobody knows the number of students that are served by those small schools. There's something from 2021 on OSPI's site, and I haven't gone through and added them up first because I was going to ask TJ to make me a program or something so that I don't have to add them by hand, all 200 of them. But I think we can do more because we have been so successful in our small coalition with the islands. And I'd like to see what we can jumpstart for small schools. That's it. Review of calendar. Reminder, the date change for the April meeting is Tuesday, April 29th. And Fred wants to come up with another new date next week for the bid proposals for us executive
staff. Executive would be a publicly short, quick, and share with you the bid, how we're going to approach it, and you would have to prove the bid so we can now really talk to the company right after that. So I would like to do it no later than Wednesday, if we could. Even if, is everybody available at a noon anytime next week? We meet at the district office commons.
What day?
In my mind, I thought Wednesday. I don't know.
Tuesday is a little bit better for me, but I can do Wednesday if I can be out of there by 12:45.
Jose, we be ready by Tuesday. So can you do it on Tuesday?
So you're gonna bet the ones you can present for the one bid that we're trying to go with, or you chose.
No, I really going to show you the one bid, but then we'll talk to you about the changes that would have would need to occur on a levy plan because it's a little higher than the water. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that would be
Tuesday at noon.
You'd be good at Tuesday at noon.
Okay. Yeah, so for Tuesday, if it's good with Mel.
Is that better for you, Mel?
Tuesday works great for me.
Okay. Tuesday at noon, school board meeting at the district.
It's office. Like April Fool's Day, so it's like.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Perfect.
April Fool's Day.
Oh, yeah. Sure, yeah. Okay. Anything else?
So, at the district office. Wait a minute.
Yes.
Yes, there is going to be
some action for sure.
On the April 28th meeting, it's moving up one day. Is there an executive session? It's moving from the 29th to the 28th, right?
No, it's moving from
the 30th to the 29th.
Okay.
And at this point, there is an executive session that remains to be seen based on.
Okay.
But right now, there's not.
Myself and another board member have a commitment prior to that, so we need to know if there's an executive session right now.
Okay. We don't. Okay. But we do need to be regular. 5 o'clock
that day. Okay, perfect. 5 is good, but okay. I should be at 4:30. Thank you. Okay.
So are we all, is there any issue? What were you asking for then? Do you, so we'll be able to get the information out and have an actionable meeting on Tuesday at noon?
Okay.
Shouldn't be more than about 10 to 15 minutes, I would think, unless you guys have a lot more discussion.
Oh, I don't.
Okay. If there's nothing else, I call this meeting adjourned at 6:23. Thank you, everybody.
Play ball. We're gonna need more sand for that.
I know.
We need a lot more sand for the picking up
my Yeah. It smells really good.
Listen, I'm not afraid.
You know.
Thanks.